It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hanson, your host. Well, Yosemite National Park is currently seeking input on its draft visitor access management plan, which could impact how many people enter the park at a given time during the peak months of the season. During the first couple of segments of this weekend show, we're going to hear about it and what is being proposed and why with Scott Genneman, who is the Yosemite Ranger and spokesperson. And then later in the show, we're also going to hear some of the opinions and concerns of local lodging and businesses from Terry Marshall, who is the volunteer board member with Visit Tuolumne County and the director of marketing for Evergreen Lodge, Rush Creek Lodge, and the Firefall Ranch. But first, Scott Genneman, it's good to have you back on Motherlode Views.
Good morning, BJ.
You know, first off, can you talk a little bit about the reason that the park is developing a visitor access management plan?
I can. And first of all, it's nice to be with you again and with all of the listeners. So I always enjoy being on Motherlode Views. It's always a great experience for me. For people that know Yosemite National Park, know that you know, Yosemite gets crowded, and especially in the summer, and we've experiencing high visitation. For example, in 2016, we had a peak visitation over 5 million visitors, and we've been hovering about 4 million visitors since then. And then, of course, there was the pandemic, and a lot has changed. But what's been consistent, not only for the last 4 or 5 years, but literally the last 100 years or so, is the popularity of Yosemite and the traffic congestion and some of the issues we have. And so the Visitor Access Management Plan, or VAMP as we call it, is addressing this decades-long issue of congestion. We're trying to solicit public comment, and the plan addresses the congestion. How do we alleviate congestion, provide for a good visitor experience, protect the park resources, and make it fair and equitable for everybody?
And then what is kind of the preferred alternative that's been identified with this plan?
Well, I'll back into it just a little bit and try to be brief, is that, as folks remember, is with the pandemic, back in 2020, we did have a bit of a closure period. And since then, in 2021, 22, and this year, 2024, we've piloted several different reservations programs. And by piloting means we just test them out. So we've done them, for example, for 7 days a week. We've done them for, 24 hours a day. And so in 22, and this year, we're doing what we call our peak hours reservation system. And what this means is that a reservation is required on spring and fall weekends, on Saturday and Sunday, and then for about a 6-week period in the summer, July through August. And the way it works is that folks that are coming in during those reservation periods do need to secure a reservation on recreation.gov. And we have an all-day reservation and an afternoon reservation that folks can come in at noon or after. But we also have in this that folks can come in before 5 a.m. or after 4 p.m. without a reservation. So if someone is unable to secure one, they can come in again, before 5 a.m. or after 4 p.m., and this is a way that we can, we can say that, everybody can visit the park. Now, when the plan came out, and we can talk about the process, but we did, list what we call a preferred alternative, and this is in the alternatives, and the preferred alternative is similar to what we're doing now, and that's why I wanted to expand on that a little bit. It's a the peak hour system, again, anyone can come in before 5 a.m. or after 4 p.m. without a reservation, but there are reservations required on the spring weekends and for a period in the summer. And so we feel that the preferred alternative is the way that, not only can it meet the purpose and need of the plan, but it can allow the maximum number of visitors in, it can ensure that good quality visitor experience, it can protect the park resources, and it's just better for the visitors and better for the park.
So it would be pretty much the pilot program that's in place right now would become the permanent program. Is that correct?
It's similar. There's some differences that are in the plan, and that's why we're asking. What we've done is that it's through NEPA, which is the National Environmental Policy Act, and so it's an environmental assessment. So we've had two public comment period so far, where folks have, submitted issues. In fact, I'll mention here is a good time. We've had a lot of great comments. We've had over 6,000 public comments, over 800 letters. And so last week or the week before last on August 14th, we released the draft plan. And this draft plan lists four alternatives, and then we're asking for public comments on the draft plan. The public comments are accepted through September 30th, through the end of September. And then what we're going to do is take the draft plan, do what we call comment analysis, go through all the comments, and then come up with a decision based upon, you know, what we found through the pilots. We've been doing extensive monitoring, a lot of research, a lot of observations, a lot of data. So it's what we're seeing that works best for the park visitors in the park, and also I'm incorporating public comment, and that's why the public comment. You know, we've received great participation so far, but this is really it's the final and most critical window for folks to comment on the draft plan before it becomes final.
And is there going to be a meeting coming up in Groveland about this plan?
Yes, we're going to have several public meetings, and these meetings are an open house format where people can come in, and we'll have various members of the park management team there, and they can explain components of the plan. We're doing them in the gateway communities. We are going to have a meeting in Groveland. It'll be on the evening of September 10th from 5 to 7 p.m., and it'll be at the Groveland Community Resilience Center. We're going to have, again, park management, park rangers. We're going to have some of our folks from the Denver Service Center who have been assisting us in formulating the plan. So this is really a good way to talk with us face-to-face about what's in the plan and how it's going to affect future visits to Yosemite National Park.
When you talk about giving public comment on the plan, what's the best way to do that? Do you go online or do you submit it via mail? What's the best way to do so?
The best way is through what we call our PEPSI, which is the public comment form. You know, all of this information, if folks go to our website, www.nps.gov/YOSE, Yosemite, which is our website, and we have a whole section on VAMP, the Visitor Access Management Plan, so people can go there. They can download the plan. You know, the plan's over 200 pages. They can find the form to submit a public comment. So we are accepting, of course, we are accepting letters, and if folks want to mail a letter in, that's great, or email, that's fine too, but the preferred method is through this through the comment system. People can submit their comments online, and then we will, analyze the comments at the conclusion of the period in October.
We need to take a quick break. We're focusing on the Yosemite Visitor Access Management Plan. The draft review period is underway, and it could have some big impacts on Yosemite National Park. We're joined on the phone this morning by Scott Gedeman, Yosemite Ranger and spokesperson. We're going to talk with him a little bit more during this next segment. Then in the final segment, we're going to hear from Terry Marshall, who is a volunteer board member with Visit Tuolumne County and the director of marketing for Evergreen Lodge, Rush Creek Lode, and Firefall Ranch. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our second segment coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And welcome back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host, talking about the Yosemite National Park Visitor Access Management Plan that's being developed. It will impact the park and when visitors can and can't come in potentially. We're talking first with Scott Gedeman to get an overview. He's the Yosemite Ranger and spokesperson. I know there have been some concerns raised by groups like Tuolumne County Board of Supervisors sent a letter of concern, and some visitors bureaus have also as well. You know, has there been kind of a response to the National Park Service or Yosemite has just concerns to the gateway communities who may be opposed to this?
Well, we've been working with the gateways, for years, and in fact, that's one of my, one of my duties, primary duties is working with the gateways, and we've heard a lot of public feedback. We've had a lot of meetings. With them. And so what's interesting is that we also are fully cognizant of the fact that, you know, Yosemite National Park impacts the gateway communities, you know, not just, Sonora, Groveland, but, you know, other ones, you know, like Oakhurst and Mariposa and things like that. So there is a socioeconomic analysis in the plan that our planners have analyzed, you know, the impacts on the local communities of it, and we certainly realize there is an impact. But to answer your question directly, we have received a lot of comments from, you know, the groups that you mentioned, both individual individuals and groups, and we're incorporating those, as part of the plan. And so what we are asking now is that in those previous two rounds, as I mentioned, we received with the 800 letters and 6,000 comments, right now is really important. And so we're in contact with, both local governments, around the county, the surrounding communities, with the visitor bureaus, with the elected officials and things like that. So really right now is that again, we do identify the preferred alternative per the NEPA policy. And we do understand that there are concerns, and we have heard them, and we ask that these groups and individuals just please express those concerns in the form of a public comment. And then also anyone, of course, that wants to come to the meeting, and the one coming up in Groveland is wonderful, and we would certainly welcome the opportunity to discuss the plan.
And the final decision, that's the National Park Service. It doesn't take like an act of Congress or anything like that, correct?
Correct. What happens is that we, September 30th, the public comment period ends. We analyze the comments. We have a section called response for comments, and then we come up with a decision, and then our superintendent will recommend it. Then the regional director, what we call the Pacific West Regional Director of the National Park Service, he will ultimately sign off on the decision, and then the plan will be final at that point.
Well, Scott, I appreciate all the information on the plan. Anything else you'd like to add?
I'll just add that this is, you know, this is really a moment in time. We feel that, you know, for many folks, and especially in the Tuolumne County area, that know and love Yosemite, and I've seen it over the years, that this plan, you know, we're feeling really good. We feel that we're, you know, addressing concerns about traffic congestion, about everything, you know, long lines at gates, getting people on trails, you know, all the visitor experience things are in there, and also, you know, the environmental effects, the socioeconomic effects. And so this is really an opportunity for folks to really help us shape the future of Yosemite. The robust civic engagement that we've had thus far and we continue to have is critically important. And so, you know, we, as the National Park Service, would really just like to urge people to, hop online, go to our website, you know, download or, you know, and read the plan, submit comments. And this is an opportunity that's going to really impact us. And then one thing I'll add real quickly, too, is that, you know, although this plan, you know, once it's finalized, we'll implement it, we've also really, really emphasized in the plan flexibility and adaptability. And so, you know, what that means is, you know, there's changing conditions, you know, for example, when Tioga Road is open or not, when Glacier Point is open. And so although the plan will give us the framework to manage visitor access in the future, I do want to be, you know, sure to point out that, you know, the plan will change as technology develops. As conditions change, as things change, we want to be as flexible and adaptable as we possibly can, but at the same time, preserving the park resources and providing that good visitor experience, because every visitor, whether they're from Sonora or, you know, Europe, deserves a good quality experience when they come to Yosemite National Park.
Yeah, popular place, definitely far and wide for people who like to visit Yosemite. You mentioned technology too. Is there technology yet available? You can kind of, where you can track, you know, where the heavily visited parts are at certain times of the day?
Yeah, one thing that we're doing, we're experimenting with a lot of things as we talked about before with the pilot programs. We've looked at things like license plate readers for people that have their reservations. We have some connectivity issues just being in the mountain environment. So we're looking at, you know, ways to, you know, hopefully increase connectivity. We're looking at different ways, you know, maybe the passes can be sold different ways. And so as technology changes, we're going to continue to incorporate that into the plan. And right now, there are certainly challenges, you know, with the fact that, you know, people can come up to the entrance station, and if they don't have a pass, they'll need, you know, internet and things like that. So we're certainly not there yet. And that's the important thing is that, you know, once this plan is done, it's going to set the framework for what we do. But we're continuing to, you know, to look at the technology, and as things, continue to improve and technology is available to help us both sell the reservations, you know, get the people in the gate and manage the crowds, is something that we're doing literally every day.
Again, that meeting coming up in Groveland is September 10th. Scott Gettyman, we thank you for your time today.
Thank you, BJ. Always a pleasure to be here.
And during our final segment of Motherload Views coming up, we're going to dive into the plan a little bit further. We're going to speak with Terry Marshall, who is a board member of Visit Tuolumne County, also the director of marketing for Evergreen Lodge, Rush Creek Lodge, and Firefall Ranch. That's coming up next. We're focusing on the Yosemite Draft Visitor Access Management Plan. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We'll be back with our final segment in just a minute. Motherload Views brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And welcome back to Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Well, during the early part of the show, we heard from Scott Gettyman, Yosemite spokesperson, about the draft visitor access management plan for Yosemite National Park. During this final segment, we reached out to Visit Tuolumne County to weigh in on the matter, and the group noted that Terry Marshall would be one of the best people to speak on it. She is the director of marketing for Evergreen Lodge, Rush Creek Lodge, and the Firefall Ranch. She's also a volunteer as a board member for Visit Tuolumne County and the Tuolumne County Lodging Association. Terry Marshall, thank you for coming on with us here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate being invited.
Yes. So big picture, Yosemite's current efforts to put in place a visitor access management plan. What's kind of your reaction and observations?
Well, I think we all agree that the park is in need of a smart management plan that will provide fair access to visitors while really protecting the park itself. We're all here to be good stewards of the park. It's very challenging. A lot of things that work for other parks won't work for Yosemite, obviously, because we're very much a pass-through park with the four major entrances, and so many people come in one gate and leave out of another, so that automatically rules out a lot of options that work in other areas. You know, I was actually in the park way back when. I was the marketing manager for the concessioner and lived in Yosemite Valley when the congestion got so bad that we had serious issues with road rage in the valley and, you know, really upset, angry visitors who were abusing park staff. It was pretty terrible. So I get it. I saw firsthand, you know, the need for some kind of management. The challenge really is that Yosemite is part of a regional economic ecosystem. So, you know, you've got the environmental ecosystem, but the economic ecosystem is something that really needs to be taken into account as well. And what we're seeing with so many of the pilot programs that have been attempted so far is it's been very much to the detriment of the economy in the gateway communities. And on top of that, what they've done really is taken all of that rage for the congestion that was happening in the valley and pushed it out to the gateway communities. So by their own account, even with the current system, they're turning away an average of 700 cars a day. And when they turn those guests away, they go immediately to the first gateway businesses that they find and take it out on us. So now our staff is taking a lot of abuse and anger and frustration from the general public, and that's not okay either.
Yeah, has there been kind of a lot of confusion when people come to, say, like a lodging business like you represent, you know, coming there and not really understanding that there was going to be restrictions in place?
There is a lot of that, and it's despite all of our efforts throughout the gateway communities to keep the communication as top of mind as we possibly can. And that's another downfall of the current pilot system and the past pilot systems as well, is, you know, the Park Service has not done much to communicate the rules and the processes. They make their announcement, and then, you know, you look at what happens on social media, and they're not providing updates to tell people about availability and, you know, how many passes or reservations are available in coming days. Us, all of us in the gateways, the private sector businesses, we're the ones who are investing in the social media campaigns, the email campaigns to our databases of subscribers, emails to our overnight guests, making sure they know well in advance what they need to do. We maintain communication on our websites with travel update pages with all of the instructions. Like, we've all been really working overtime to get the word out, and yet even with that, there are still plenty of people who just don't know about it. On top of that, the system itself, recreation.gov, I don't mind saying, this is not my opinion, this is an actual fact. In the month of June, the way that the website presented the reservations, it looked like on weekdays that there were no reservations available. Well, you didn't need reservations on the weekdays in June. So that really hurt our regional economy, because people weren't coming because they thought they needed a pass and couldn't get one, when in fact they didn't even need one. So really poor communication, and that really needs to be taken into account. The other thing that really upsets guests is they cannot understand why they aren't able to get help from us in getting their reservation to drive into the park. They get very angry with us. The only way that we can help with that is we refer them to Yartz as much as we possibly can. And Yartz has been a great partner, providing all kinds of like discount programs and special passes and helping to get the word out that Yartz is a terrific option. It really is. And then, you know, paying to go on any of our guided excursions. But not everybody can afford that level of spend. You know, they're already spending so much just to get here and be here. So it's tough.
What would you say has kind of been the reaction of guests to kind of the park's response that everybody can still come, but they just have to wait till late in the afternoon or evening to come at those peak times if they don't have a reservation?
It's just a non-starter, really. Like, you're going to leave, you're going to come in the gate at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and have just a couple of hours to enjoy the park. And then, you know, it's dinner time, and it just doesn't, you know, the 4 o'clock cutoff is just, you know, you might as well tell people they just can't come.
Do you have any thoughts on, you mentioned, you know, there are potential issues in the park when it comes to visitor access and transportation issues. You know, are there things that you would like to see instead of the current pilot programs that have been in place?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we have proposed a solution that would allow the park to monitor the crowding in the East Valley of Yosemite Valley, which is really the crux of the matter, crowding in Yosemite Valley. They already have traffic counters where they need them to know how many cars they have in Yosemite Valley at any given time. And rather than shutting down the entire 1,200 plus square miles of park to everybody, they could put a system in place that says, okay, this is the number of cars we're going to allow in the valley at any given time. And when people arrive at any gate, have the count available at the gates and hand out passes for Yosemite Valley until they get to the number that's the maximum that they want in Yosemite Valley. Once they hit that max, then you can still welcome people into the park and say, Yosemite Valley is currently full. It will open back up, let's say, at 2 p.m. Until then, here are the other parts of the park that you're free to go and enjoy. Go to the high country. Go to any of the groves of giant sequoias. There are so many places for people to explore that are not Yosemite Valley. Also, all of the gateways have marketing materials in place, in play, to show people, here's a list of 20 things you can do in our gateway community while you're waiting for the valley to open up. And then that would disperse people, if not in other parts of the park, but throughout gateway attractions until, you know, early afternoon when it's easier to get in and get access to Yosemite Valley.
You know, being connected with other business groups and tourism groups, are you hearing common concerns among other groups and organizations as well?
Absolutely. Yes. You hear also a lot of sort of misleading talk about how tourism revenue has bounced back to pre-pandemic levels. Well, that might be the case, but also the cost of doing business has gone up upwards of 30% for everybody. And when you look at occupancy in lodging, for example, where everybody is still a good 10 to 15% below the occupancy levels that they should be for peak summer season, which is the peak earning period for all of our gateway businesses. And when you add up the dollars that that makes up for sales tax, transient occupancy tax, which is the TOT that overnight guests pay when they stay in any of our gateway lodging, the missed revenue is huge. And that's not just about profit for businesses, which is not a bad thing, but it also means that the counties in the gateways are missing much needed revenue to go towards essential services and emergency services, so fire, law enforcement, roads. They all are struggling to find the funding that they need, and we're missing out on our peak earning opportunity for tourism-related businesses when the reservation system is making it that much harder for people to plan to spend their summer in Yosemite.
Yeah, it's very interesting hearing the firsthand impacts on business and the economy from somebody who represents, you know, lodging establishments. Anything else I didn't ask you about that'd be worth noting on this topic?
Well, I think more than anything, if we could just remind everybody to just be kind to anybody who is a frontline worker in any tourism-related business. They're working as hard as they can, they're doing the best they can, and they are bearing the brunt of the anger and frustration from the general public. So any chance you get, smile, say hi, and thank a frontline tourism worker for everything that they're doing to make our destination a welcoming place for visitors from all around the world.
And I imagine you and others are providing feedback on this visitor access management plan during this window that's open right now?
Constantly, yes. There are many of us who are extremely active in communicating with the Park Service and sharing ideas, and they're responsive to us, and we really appreciate that. So I want to make it clear, it's not an us versus the park kind of situation. We're all in it together and trying to figure it out, and I know that we will. There are a lot of really good, talented, smart people who are working on it. We just have to keep really looking at the data from all angles and making smart decisions that keep in mind that Yosemite is part of a regional economic ecosystem that needs to be a part of the consideration.
Sounds like some others, too, like Congressman Tom McClintock, have also raised some concerns about this plan.
Yes. Yep. There are several government representatives who are getting involved, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that in the coming weeks and months.
Well, Terry Marshall, we appreciate your time today, and thanks for coming on to give your points of views and thoughts on the Yosemite Visitor Access Management Plan.
Well, thank you so much, BJ, for having me, and I really appreciate you taking the time to spread the word. And again, please just encourage everybody. It's not us versus the park. We're all in this together, and so let's figure it out.
Well, we thank Terry Marshall. She is with a representative, a director of marketing for Evergreen Lodge, Rush Creek Lodge, and Firefall Lodge. She also volunteers as a board member for Visit Tuolumne County and the Tuolumne County Lodging Association. During the early part of the show, we heard from Yosemite spokesperson Scott Gedeman. I'm BJ Hansen. I was your host. We'll see you back next week for more Motherlode Views.
You've been listening to Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.